Hello, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 116. This is the New Day edition here. We're starting to show Thursday some love. We'll explain that in just a little bit. Hopefully, everybody out there is having a good day, good week so far. We're trying to move your caffeination around a little bit to acquiesce to both my schedule and the schedule of the world around me, it seems. So hopefully, like I said, everything's going good in your world. Right now, I'd just like to ask everybody right up front and personal, like, if you have a free moment tomorrow, Friday, or any time after that when you happen to be listening to this podcast, just send your thoughts and or prayers to my father-in-law. He's going into surgery tomorrow, and there were some complications the last time that he was in surgery. They actually ended up delaying the surgery a whole week, so we'd just like to ask everybody to send your thoughts, prayers, and everything else you can over to him. we're basically trying to just get through this and make sure everybody's all right at the end. Yeah, thank you to anybody out there who sends their well wishes from here on out at this point. And now, if the show sounds a little bit different right there, that's because there's a massive issue with the episode that you are currently listening to. What is that issue, you might ask? Well, there's this strange hissing audio. I don't know what it is. It crops up from time to time, but the rear 20 minutes of this episode that you are currently listening to had to be retaped. So we're trying to move things around and make sure that everything works out. So what you would normally be hearing here sounds a little something like this.
I'm very fond of saying, or have been in the past, that everybody has a day of the week that particular.
And I'm sure nobody wanted to hear that. So, there's certain segments of this show that might seem a little bit choppy, and we apologize at all costs for that. But we'd like to return you to your regularly scheduled caffeination right now, already in progress. This might seem a little weird and a little jumpy, but we hope everybody understands. Basically, we moved the show from Wednesday nights to Thursday nights because of a series of stuff that happens at home. We have a whole bunch of things that are going on Wednesday nights, both from the wife food shopping, or the wife and I food shopping from time to time. I'm doing softball, whole nine yards. So basically, until further notice, the Caffeination will be taping on Thursday nights. If you note, if there's a large outcropping of support for Caffeination on Wednesday nights, we will be endeavor to bring it back to Wednesday nights and hopefully set everything right with the world. But up until that point in time, and we hear such like that, we're going to keep it on Wednesday nights. So we now return you to your regularly scheduled Caffeination podcast already in progress. That's about it. We have some great tech tidbits for you today. Again, no PodSafe music because I'm lazy. Didn't get a chance to look through and find suitable PodSafe music for everybody. So let me know if that's an interesting thing to you. If you like the fact that we've eliminated it over the past couple weeks just because I've been lazy, or if you'd like us to bring it back, please. Feedback helps out for all the different stuff we do. We have a lot of tech tidbits. A little bit on the tech talk side of things. Which if you're new to the show. Let me just run down what this is. Tech Tidbits is a section where we find all the offbeat news and strange things that we think that you need to be aware of as a technologist, listener, normal everyday human. We try and break any language and stuff that we find down into simple, understandable terms. If there's something you don't understand, please feel free to drop us an email. We will either email you back or respond to it on the next show. That email, by the way, is caffeination@gmail.com. If you're listening to this podcast over the stream at the Tech Podcast Network and you'd like to find it, then you can definitely head on over to where it lives at www.caffeination.com. So, like I said, that's the whole thing with, all right, there we go. Sorry about that. That's the whole thing with the tech tidbits. That's basically what we do. Now, the tech talk is a new section that we've actually introduced here recently. What that is basically is we pick a topic and we explain a little bit. We expound upon how it can help you or whatever else. If there's a topic you'd like to see discussed, again, send an email to caffeination@gmail.com or leave a little comment over at caffeination.com. We'll be glad to get back to you. And hopefully increase your knowledge just a little bit. And then we have our standard and obligatory caffeinated bits, because this is the Caffeination Podcast, not only fueled by a high amount of caffeine, but we also like to give you the best in caffeine and coffee-related news that's out there. The pickings have been really lean lately. I don't know if this is the off-season for coffee or people just stop drinking it as the months warm up, but I don't know. We have a couple little interesting tidbits at the end for that. So all in all, that about sums up what the Caffeination Podcast is. Sorry about that, in 5 minutes or less. So just wanted to give you a little bit of information about our sponsor. These days, whether you're in business or you simply want to share something with family or friends, email and voicemail just aren't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, an online meeting solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with all your friends. GoToMeeting makes it easy to provide training and share information with everybody. All you need is your PC, an internet connection, and a phone. You invite people to meet you online, your attendees will see your computer screens on their monitor. And best of all, you can meet as long as you want, as often as you need, for one flat rate. But don't take my word for it. Give it a shot yourself. Head on over to GoToMeeting.com. You can try it free for 45 days. You don't even need a credit card. Just like we said, head on over to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and type in the promo code PODCAST. That's PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, the Try It Free button, and the promo code PODCAST. Try GoToMeeting free today. All right, so we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the show. It's fun to have a sponsor that we've worked with for so long. They have a really nice product, so hey, it's easy to advertise for something like that, you know what I mean? And it also helps out with all those bills that are coming due. I don't know what it is with me in the month of April, but all of my bills for my online services are due right around then. I'm going to have to try and find a way to extend it into the summer months, which are usually a little bit more plentiful with money. Because, I mean, my birthday's coming up, hosting bills due at the beginning of April, Xbox Live bills due at the beginning of April, and I'm pretty sure at least two of the magazines that I used to be subscribed to were also started in April. Now, they weren't all birthday presents or anything, it's just, I don't know, maybe this is a year I start to get motivated to do things. But we just wanted to send you on into tech tidbits here today. We have two very related stories right off the bat. First of all is we have a little article for you on how to screw up at your job and keep your job. I mean, I'm not talking your average everyday, oh, you might have you might have flipped off the boss accidentally, or if you did something like I did at one of my first jobs where you snap at somebody and find out he's the owner of the company. No, we're not talking about anything like that. No, we're talking about a massive, huge, life-altering, possibly mistake. How about let's take the Alaskan Department of Revenue. Person working in there, a quick-fingered technician, so to speak, accidentally reformats a hard drive that contains all of the data for a $38 billion, with a B, billion-dollar account. This is an oil-funded account. I don't know what kind of account they're talking about here. This story's over at Engadget. But reformats the drive and then somehow, unbelievably, decides that the proper thing to do after this is to accidentally delete the backup. And now the first thing you're asking is, oh, wow, how quick did they kick this person out and say, hey, this is Alaska, did they ever actually make it home? No. This person still has a job there, and they found out that they had 300 boxes of paperwork, which had all of the files pre-digitization. So this was the hard copy of everything that was removed. What they did was they scanned every single document back in. Now, this took long hours. This took unbelievable amount of man hours. And they completed, actually, unbelievably, within 6 weeks. So a few careless keystrokes, basically, and it added up to $220,000 and $700,000. I don't know. That's $221,000 in excess labor costs. Now imagine after all this, the person was not fired. They're probably going to actually be up for a promotion in a couple of years or something like that. But it's just unbelievably and unfathomably that they still have this, if that's even a word, that they still have their job after this. And then we head on over to the political front. If you haven't seen it, there's a video. We're not going to link to it because while I like it, I don't like it for its political views. I'm not a very political person. I have my opinions one way or another. They're usually not going to show up on this show. But in the Democratic primary, you have Barack Obama on one side and you have Hillary Clinton on the other side. Somebody came up with a very clever, viral, and somewhat insulting, if you're of the Clinton persuasion, video portraying Hillary as Big Brother. And it's the classic 1984 Apple commercial somebody running along, or a buxom lass running along, throwing a sledgehammer through the screen that had Hillary Rodham's face on it. And you know, it says, you know, January 18th, you have the possibility to change the world, whole nine yards. So it's kind of interesting. Very well done, I might add. From a video standpoint, they meshed the two medias very well. They didn't use the original version of Apple's ad, though, because if you take a look at it, there was a version of the ad that was put out a couple years, or maybe a year or so ago, where they actually went in and digitally added an iPod. Because in 1984, they didn't have iPods, but if you look, as the Olympian is running through the drones, there's a little iPod stuck to her belt. So this is the updated version of that. But apparently, so it gets out, Hillary's ticked off. She accuses Barack of doing something nefarious. He, of course, says, "Nope, not me." Turns out that the company that he hired to be the publicist for his campaign, somebody at that company but working on a different account, actually created the video. So this comes out later on, and so he's looking for work right now. So while I think he might have an excellent job in video editing in his future, politics just might not work for him. So if you're going to make a little bit of a political statement, make sure that it can't bite you in the rear end. This is a whole CYA corner kind of thing. And talking about the first job, the Alaskan thing, we wanted to find an article, a comprehensive how-to on how to automatically back up your computer. Now, we have not gone through this from front to back. We're actually going to talk about this in the Tech Talk next week, backups and how they work and how you might be able to set up a server in your house or something like that to help you with your backups. I know we talked about it a little bit before, but we're actually going to go through the article. We're going to try and find some other utilities that might help you. But this seems to be a unbelievably thorough use of Linux and a couple other different operating systems on how to set up, you know, network accessible storages on your network or a NAS. It's a really interesting article. From what I've seen, it's like, you know what? This is the kind of thing that I need to set up here at the Caffeination. So definitely wanted to throw that out there, see if anybody had any kind of information about it. Now, the next thing we have up here is a WIB installation. This is the Will It Blend. I don't know if anybody out there is familiar with this cast of characters, but there's a faux company called Blend Tech that routinely tries to blend things like Red Bull, chicken, hard drives, light bulbs, marbles, crowbars, and everything else. If you go over to YouTube and type in Will It Blend, there's a wonderful assortment of stuff. Well, there's a rather interesting video over on YouTube right now and linked off of Engadget, where it was the Will It Blend guys actually had a demonstration for Novell's BrainShare. It's a conference that was recently put out there. It's basically, just listen to the beginning of this. First of all,
Will
you have
Will It Blend. That is the question.
You have the obligatory series of clips where he's trying to blend all kinds of different things, and the somewhat interesting music here. And Tom Dickerson is the host, and he goes through blending things with like a hard drive. And
it's time for Novell BrainShare. And the big question on everyone's mind is whether it's even possible to get all the pieces of your IT infrastructure to blend together. Well, let's find out. First, almost every business runs a mix of different operating systems. So I'll start by throwing in a Windows Vista CD. I've got an Apple Mighty Mouse here, for those of you who are running some Macs. And of course, everyone at BrainShare is using SUSE Linux, right? Then there's storage, blades, and all the hundreds of systems and devices you deal with every day. And we can't forget about your end users. By the way, this is just a demonstration. If you find yourself fantasizing about throwing actual users in the blender, please get help.
All right, we're going to stop it right there. We're going to let your imagination take off with it after that. So you're wondering exactly what kind of stuff this will be blended here. I'm going to give you a little bit of a description, then we're going to let you head on over there and check it out yourself, because I find it incredibly funny. I like some of their stuff, but first off, he has the traditional BlendTec blender, just basically like a gas-powered lawnmower engine, I can only imagine, and it fit into a nice little blender thing. He actually drops a Real Vista, or what looks to be an interestingly colored Vista CD in. He does drop a Real Mighty Mouse in, and then he drops the SUSE Linux, or I call it Sussy. I've heard people say Suzy. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's Novell's brand of Linux. It's what I actually use at home for my Linux installation. It's what I use in work for my Linux installation. I'm a very big fan of Sussy. So he drops a lovely little chameleon plush toy in there. When he says blades, instead of the storage units, you know, the network storage units that are called blade servers or things like that, he actually drops razor blades in. And for users, he has a bunch of little plastic dolls. I'm only going to let you imagine what this blends into, what kind of strange gelatinous smoking mess. So I just thought I'd preview the first part of BlendTec there. I thought it was kind of fun that we just pass it along to everybody. Let's see what else we got here in the pipeline. All right, Microsoft. I recently posted on one of the message boards I hang out on over at unscripted360.com, but there was a hacking attempt supposedly on Xbox Live. Now, it was a misnomer when it was first put out there. It was not Xbox Live that was hacked. It was actually accounts that are gamer tags at one point and linked over to your Windows Live ID at the other point. So what Microsoft's actually saying that there is a live account hacking situation going on, but they're saying most of it is due to social engineering, which is where people get you to give them information that they want, but you really shouldn't be giving them. So people have run up bills on credit cards. It's a whole huge issue for Microsoft dealing with internally, it appears. But Major Nelson from over at majornelson.com, he's a very large Xbox supporter. He works for the company, whole nine yards. He's considered by many to be the voice of Xbox Live. He came out and said there is no hacking on Xbox Live, and he is correct in that one small manner, but there have been accounts hacked that are linked from their PC. So it's more along the lines of the account itself was compromised, not the service. Wanted to kind of clear that up. Moving on to, I don't know about how many of you out there are actual Mario Kart fans, but Mario Kart DS apparently hits Meat Space as it goes, or RL. If anybody remembers those little power car toys that you could have, you build the tracks. They're plastic tracks with little metal strips in the middle. And you have the two little race cars, and you have the trigger guns in your hand, and when you pull the trigger, the cars race around the track, and you had to speed up or slow down depending on the curves coming up and everything. Well, apparently somebody decided to create an official Nintendo-licensed product where it's Mario and Yoshi. So it's lane 1 and lane 2 running around. This is awesome. I don't know how you're going to... it's called the Slot Racers, basically. I don't know how that you're actually going to get this to work, but I would love to see, you know, like a battle version of this, or I'd love to see a version where you have other characters and everything else like that. Now, it's really cool, really awesome, but you know, I just think it could be so much more. So if they need to make like little little remote control cars with the guys on them and let them actually fire tiny little shells, I think that could work for their situation. So wanted to move right along there. Just want to throw that out there because I thought it was so fun. So you can head on over to caffeination.com and check that out. Also, you can head on over there. We have a whole bunch of RIAA stuff today. One of the things, colleges fight back. If you're unaware, RIAA has started asking colleges to identify IP addresses that are on their network and give them students' names that are associated with them. Because they found out, okay, there's a lot of file sharing associated with this IP. We'd like you to give us that student's name. The colleges are starting to fight back, which is awesome for the file sharing people. But they're basically saying that the RIAA is wasting the university's time. They're trying to subpoena them and say that you need to supply us with these records. When certain colleges who don't keep that record... everybody thinks that it might be simple. Okay, a student's in a dorm room, they have their computer plugged in, that's their IP address, you can track it back to that. No, not necessarily. There's something called DHCP that a lot of places run on. I know the university where I work actually runs 95 5% of the machines off DHCP, which means basically every time you unplug that cord and plug it back in, there is a possibility that you're going to get a different IP address. So there is no real way to track just by the IP address who was signed up to it. Now, in our university, you have to log in through a proxy server. So basically, as soon as you plug your cord in, it won't let you do anything until you log into the system. So you use your username and password. Now, that would identify you as being with that IP address at that period of time. Now, the RIAA is saying that we would like that information. Most universities do not keep historical data. Or I'm not going to say most universities. Most of the universities that are discussed in the article do not keep historical data. Some of them only keep it back as far as a month. So that way they'd be able to comply with like federal regulators and stuff like that coming in. And they're under no compulsion at all to give up the to give up that information to the RIAA. So it's kind of cool. But now there's a whole bunch of people out there basically just saying no. The University of Nebraska has actually stepped it up a notch. Yes, they've taken it up a they've kicked it up a notch and thrown a little Emeril Lagasse style bam right down. They're actually asking the RIAA to pay up. They're invoicing them for the waste of time that it took to respond to their suggestions and to answer all their questions and everything else like that. So I think that is unbelievably awesome, and I really hope that this kind of puts the RIAA back in their place. It's like, look, you know, we're not entitled to surf for your intellectual property here. We're, you know, we comply with the law and everything else like that, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff that are coming out. But then another little story about the RIAA coming out. The RIAA was recently served with an order that they need to turn over their attorney's billing records. So I think they're that the courts are trying to figure out exactly what kind of compensation is going into these hearings, because we've talked about this before. If you're stealing a song from somebody and you shared it 20 times, there is no way that you should be paying the exorbitant amount that some of the RIAA suits are asking for. I mean, they're asking for, you know, thousands of dollars. They've requested that children drop out of high school or drop out of college to pay these fines because, after all, they broke the law. And while I agree that if you are breaking the law, you know, whether or not the law is valid, you know, if you are breaking the law and you are caught, then you should be asked to pay restitution. However, the flip side of that is the restitution has to be, you know, commiserate with the crime. You know, the punishment has to fit the crime here. So if you're sharing a song, which the going rate for most songs that are out there, a la, you know, iTunes, is 99 cents per song. So if they have you sharing, let's just say, 200 songs, and they have records of 500 people downloading them, all right, you could, anywhere between $200 and $500 is a acceptable, you know, punishment for this, because you are being asked to, you know, supply the lost revenue. Now, then you take it one step further. Now, are these songs that students just collected, or are these, is this actual lost revenue? Because, for instance, let's just say a student goes online and downloads Shakira. For some unknown reason, the person wants this one song just for like 5 seconds. They just wanted to hear it to figure out like a lyric in the song or something like that. Then they delete the song. That's not lost revenue. Or a student who wants to download the songs just because these are all the songs that are available at that point in time. That's not to say that the student would have enough disposable income at any point in time during their life to grab all the songs in CD form, in legal downloadable form, that they are currently purchasing. So there's a major and serious flaw with the way that they're working out the compensation. So the courts are actually asking them to start providing some of the information about their attorney billing records in regards to a couple cases, and the RIAA is basically ignoring them. There's a whole bunch of other articles that are out there lately. Like, for instance, they're trying to sue this one mother, and it looks like they're going to lose the case. So what they're trying to do is drop the case after 2 years of extensive litigation, and the judge is not letting them. It's awesome. I don't know how it's working. As soon as I can find the link to that, I'll put it up there. We are going to be resuming the frequent blogging that we had been before to hopefully keep you more up to date on some of the tech news and tech tidbits and everything else like that that we find throughout the week. There's going to be a couple new articles that are going up. We're going to give you much more content for your viewing and listening pleasure, hopefully. So that's the RIAA. Now we have even more law stuff that's getting thrown out there. If anybody out there who's familiar with the COPPA Act of 1998. This is basically the Child Online Protection Act. It says that parents can protect their children through, it says parents can require ISPs to, or sites to, you know, block content that might be objectionable to their children. Now, there's a whole bunch of different things. Like, for instance, what I consider objectionable to my child is completely and utterly different from what, let's just say, a Midwestern housewife might consider objectionable. Hell, it's different than what my wife considers objectionable for our child to hear. So, I mean, while we have relatively close values, I mean, if you can't get two people in a marriage to agree on what is and what isn't acceptable for your son or daughter to view, then how are you going to get everyone on the internet on the same set of standards? It just doesn't work. So, basically, it was too broad, too overreaching, and the U.S. Department of Justice, this is the whole thing where they were subpoenaing the records from the different search companies trying to find out how much porn was really online. I don't know. So it's already been to the Supreme Court, and it's been bumped down to the senior district court judge, Judge Lowell Reed Jr., who wrote this sentence, which I think is the, what did I label it? Yes, the best quote ever in regards to this. I've not seen anything which sums up my feelings more than this sentence here. And here's, quote, Judge Lowell Reed Jr., perhaps we do the minors of this country harm if the First Amendment protections, which they will with age inherit fully, are chipped away in the name of their protection, end quote. So basically he's saying that you're going to end up with these children, when they reach the age of the majority, when they reach the age where they're going to be able to use their right of free speech, if you start chipping away, it's a slippery slope. The more you start taking away everybody's freedom, the more that you start little bit by little bit, the sooner you're going to turn around and realize you can't say anything, you can't do anything, and I'm really glad that the courts have started to notice this. So the 1998 COPPA law was struck down. We have two articles up there for you to check out if you'd like to see it. I think it's a great move on the court's part. If you're gonna, and they said basically, it's the return to being parents. It's your responsibility to know what your kid's doing online. There's software available out there to filter. If you find certain things objectionable, you install the software. If you don't trust your kids, then you log where they've been online. Every router has the ability, at least every router that I've seen, has the ability to send an email to an email address with every site that was visited on that router. I set it up at one point in time on my router just to see exactly what kind of traffic was going through. And you know what? It's a little eye-opening watching your own traffic go through. You're like, okay, so at this point in time, this was sent to this site. And if you have something like that going and your kids are sitting there looking at girlsgonewild.com or some other thing like that, and you don't want them to, then guess it's time to have a talk with little Johnny or little Sally. So, it's wonderful that the courts are actually saying, you know what, parents, yeah, the whole parenting thing is kind of your responsibility. So I'm glad that they're moving in that direction, because it makes, my future as a parent much more secure. Because as soon as you start having the government parent your children, then you're going to start growing a legion of drones, much like the 1984 commercial, where nobody's going to be able to think outside the box, because the box is all they will have ever known. So a little bit of a rant there. A wonderful decision by the court, though. I highly applaud it. Hey, if you have a different opinion than that, please feel free to throw it out there. I'd be glad to debate you. I'd be glad to hear another side of the decision or something that I might have missed. You can just send a comment, feedback, suggestion, whatever else you'd like to do over to caffeination@gmail.com, or you can Skype me at caffa-nation, caffi-nation, and we can have a little chat about it. Doesn't matter. I'm open to all comers, so that's fine by me. Completely on a different wavelength here. How about taking a lightsaber and turning it into a universal remote? How, you might ask? Well, there's a company from what appears to be Japan that actually is selling such a device. I don't know how much for, but it's going to be available in 2009, so we have a link on that over there. Like I said, this is offbeat news. This is stuff that reaches the length and breadth of what is on the internet. And there's no site currently that's bigger than Google right now. There's no video site that's bigger than the GooTube, as people call it, the combination of Google Video and YouTube, which actually, beside the point of the article that we're coming up with here, it, when somebody finally got an answer out of Google as to why they would buy this for an unbelievable amount of money, they said, why would you spend this kind of money for YouTube when you knew that you were just going to get sued? And their basic answer was, well, if we let YouTube to its own devices and we proceeded with our video initiatives as we had full confidence that we would, if we left it to its own devices and they were sued by all these content distributors for billions and billions of dollars, they would not have the means at their disposal to properly mount a defense. So we decided, as a proactive step, to become YouTube's legal defense team, because we would be able to adequately defend and adequately protect the business model that we were going to have from here forward. Wonderful, interesting step. It was kind of like a sidestep. You know what? Bring in a competitor. The two of us together will be stronger and have more content than the two of us separately. And you're protecting our business interests as we see them heading forward. So it's a wonderful little idea there. $1.6 billion idea. So insane. Well, this all leads us to the fact that the NBC News Corp and a whole bunch of different movie studios, what it believes to be AOL, MSN, MySpace, Yahoo, everybody else on the internet who's not Google and YouTube, are joining together to create a YouTube clone. It's going to be advertising based. Wow, wonder what that, wonder where they got that. And it's going to have basically all, you know, show clips, everything else like that, legal content from their service providers. So they're basically going to be creating channels online that you can view. So really interesting, really fun idea. I can't wait to see both companies up in action, because in order for this to work, the new YouTube, or whatever they're going to call it, the News Corp, NBC, giant GE, whatever it is, the Tubapalooza, as it shall henceforth be known, is going to be, has to be free to compete with YouTube. So I wonder if they're going to let users submit their own video content, or will that violate the intellectual property of some people? So I wonder where they're going to go with on that idea. But you know, I like it. Now this is starting to look like a real fight. So this would be like, I don't know, if Apple and PCs are sitting there going at it, and all of a sudden Linux stood up and said, yeah, you know, you're kind of forgetting about me. And Linux got together with all the other Linuxes, and everybody got together, and it'd be actually a third operating system as opposed to the next 50. It's one of the major problems with the Linux community, the fact that there is no such operating system as Linux. There's different flavors of Linux. There's 15 billion different variants of Linux. You have the corporate ones in SUSE and Red Hat, and then you have the free ones like Ubuntu and Xbuntu and Kubuntu, and it just goes on and on and on. And then you have the BSDs, the OpenBSD, NetBSD, FreeBSD. So you have all these other operating systems that are out there, where if they somehow, which will never happen, if they somehow formed like a Greek alliance and all jumped in together and became Linux, the giant penguin, you know, I'm pretty sure they would actually stand a chance at competing with the other two OSs. But still, it's all about unity. You know, if Windows had stayed fragmented, you know, into the business Windows and the home Windows, then maybe, you know, who knows. But let's see what else we have. A little bit of sustainability here. Wanted to talk about, actually, there's two things that are kind of separated, and we're going to talk about the second one first, so flip it and reverse it. Minority Report is here. If you remember the scene in Minority Report where Tom's walking through with his brand new eyes and walking through the Gap, and they say, oh, hey, Mr. Yamamoto, how'd you like those Gap jeans you bought last time? Well, we're getting closer to that. How about a interactive mirror that lets you try on clothes via the web? So you stand in front of the camera and it basically beams an image of your clothes, of the clothes, on top of your current situation. So it's kind of fun. It's being tested at Bloomingdale's in New York. So it's a, you know, they're throwing out all the proper buzzwords: digital technology, combining elements of digital technology with web 2.0. Wonderful idea, found over at a sci-fi tech blog, so I thought we'd throw that out there. Then we have our two strange sustainability things here. Let's see if I actually came up. Hi, it's me again, or as we like to call me in my little world, I would be Evil Paul, or the Paul who's here to save you from this. Just one more time, in case you forgot what I sounded like with a strange little tonal quality in my voice, there'd be this strange staticky figure talking to you right now if I hadn't caught this.
So on days when you're not using it, then you'd be...
That's right, and nobody wants him around again. So, we're going to continue on with the podcast as it was meant to be, and you will hopefully be none the wiser. Hopefully this little schizophrenic episode didn't put you off to the podcast too much, but if you see some weird jumps around, please let us know. I don't know exactly what causes this every once in a while. I think it's I might touch some kind of connection in the back of the computer that maybe wiggles things loose. We'll see. Please forgive the audio quality for this show here. We're trying to work it out. Hopefully it'll all end up the correct way. There's only a couple more things in the show today. We're going to talk to you. First off, I just wanted to mention that Tech Talk, I don't know if I already mentioned it, because, again, there's like 35 minutes of audio that's all kinds of messed up and mixed up right around now, and it's getting very late. So, our Tech Talk scheduled for this evening will not be recreated as it was almost recreated in the staticky world. No, 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 we're going to actually condense all our findings on the two little topics we're going to talk about, T-versity and free NAS. We're going to talk about that and put them into an article that's going to appear sometime over the weekend here at the Caffeination Podcast over at caffeination.com. We have two little things here. First off, sustainability, and then we're going to talk a little bit about some Minority Report stuff, a little EMF, and the wonders of the human eye. And then we're going to get on to our caffeinated bits for the day and head you on out of here. All right. First up, we're going to talk a little bit about one of the crazy wind tunnel bridges. Now, this is a completely concept idea. So what I want you to do is, in your mind's eye, dear listeners, I want you to close your eyes and envision a giant gorge, okay? You have a gorge with either water, just empty space under it, you have pedestrian traffic, whatever else you'd like to imagine. But imagine that it's spanning something like, let's just say, the San Francisco Bay, much like the San Francisco Bay Bridge, or the Golden Gate Bridge, slightly more popular of the two. Now imagine this bridge has giant spinning wheels of metal doom wrapped around it. Now, this is a normal causeway bridge, so there's no large suspensions or anything like that. But now imagine there's giant turbines, kind of like a fun house going across it, and these are actually used to create wind power. Now, I don't know why anyone hasn't thought of this before. Now, maybe it's because the stresses on the bridge and everything else like that, but I like to call it the juicer. Now, only for the reason that if you know anything about the history of the Golden Gate Bridge, then you know it's probably one of the most popular places for suicide on the planet. So someone jumping off a bridge that looks something like this would probably end up looking somewhat like Parfait. But in our little world, this doesn't happen. You put all the kinds of proper safety features in there. You have it shielded so that you can't see and get that actual clown tunnel effect when you're walking through. No nausea-inducing spinning going on. No, no, no. Everything's hidden from the human eye. And you have sustained winds, as you do in the San Francisco Bay, which on our trip 2 years ago, they said somewhere around the neighborhood of 50 to 70 mile an hour sustained winds through that channel, and they get gusts of up to 110 miles an hour. Now, could you imagine wind turbines being attached to something like that? That would generate a significant amount of electricity. Well, at least for a wind power station. Traditionally, wind power stations, I mean, even in the SimCity games, don't generate very much when you compare them to coal and everything else like that, but they're clean, so you can't really fault them for that. So definitely want to see, I wonder if there's anywhere out there, if anybody actually knows, please email us at caffeination@gmail.com, where they have something like this, some place where there's a high amount of wind traffic, and it's a dual-purpose structure. So either if they're radio towers and wind generators, anything like that, cell phone towers even, I mean, just some dual use for the space, because otherwise you just have a mini Holland sitting in your backyard and lots of wind tunnels, but no real other use for it other than the occasional crash in a movie. But, you know, other than that, move on to the next little sustainability thing. Now, if you remember, we talked a little bit about, before, a different kind of air conditioning unit, which I was corrected on, not that it was new, but it had actually been in use, and it's in use at the university where I work. But These are giant air conditioners that usually giant air conditioners usually get frozen overnight. So the air conditioners run at night to produce a block of ice, and then the block of ice is used to cool chill water lines that cool the building during the hot part of the day. Wonderful idea. Now convert that into a completely different concept of sustainable air conditioning, where you would take a solar-powered air conditioner, place it on one's roof along with a series of batteries for those morbidly hot days in the middle of the summer when it's also very cloudy, or middle of the night and it's still 104 degrees outside. You'd have this kind of thing. No idea yet on exactly how much it's going to be called, but a company called SoCool, or Soul Cool, the S-O-L for the sun, super efficient air conditioners that can run off solar panels, the extra benefit of also having a battery that can store power so you don't melt during the blackout. All right, so definitely, hey guys, get on the stick. Please let me know if anybody out there has seen something similar to this, or if I'm talking out my rear side again. But here, next little thing we have here is a glimpse into the world of Minority Report. Now, if you remember when Tom Cruise was walking through the gap in the middle of Minority Report, shameless product placement nonetheless, but they had a system that said, hey, Mr. Yamamoto, did you enjoy those gap jeans that you had? Would you like some khakis? Well, we're going to take that one step further here. There's a store, Bloomingdale's in New York, which is actually combining all kinds of different buzzword-compliant phrases such as Web 2.0 and elements of digital technology, and they're creating a mirror you stand in front of, and it images clothes onto you. So, interesting idea. Just thought we'd put that out there. Now, the last two little things we have here for the caffeination, for the tech tidbits section here at the caffeination, are actually a glimpse into the strangeness of the human body. Now, the first one is up here, someone who's actually allergic to EMF, allergic to electromagnetic fields. That's an insane idea for most of us who live in a world saturated by radio, TV, Wi-Fi, cordless headsets, Bluetooth. Every other kind of wireless signal is currently inundating your body and then dissipating again. If you have a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox, I mean, everything is just crazified. You know, you are a giant antenna and conduit. So that's one of the reasons why every once in a while when you're tuning the FM dial just a little bit and you get that station that you wanted to hear and then you take your hand away and all of a sudden you missed it, that's called hand capacitance. But that's not what we're talking about here. You were an antenna for your radio at that point. No, what we're talking about here is a woman who is allergic, well, what she says, there's no scientific claim to back this, which I find weird because I think it would be an easily testable idea. But she claims that she is allergic to electromagnetic fields. She produces things like rashes, she gets horrible headaches, dizziness. There's physical ailments that are wrong with her. And she found this out originally when she moved into an apartment where the neighbors had a cordless cell or a cordless phone and a Wi-Fi router. So there's pictures on the article that's linked off of Engadget, so that's two links further away from the caffeination, that actually show you the damage to her skin and everything like that. Now, they don't show a lot of pictures and anything. I assume it would be embarrassing for her. But they go into detail as to how they actually have to block out the EMF in her house. She actually had to move to someplace that's slightly more remote. There's film on her windows, special reflective paint on the walls. There's a silver netting that her and her husband sleep under. There's all kinds of strange ideas. And it's just taking that and saying, you know what, the human body is such a strange idea. It's just some of the things that exist and don't. It's just a wonder. At the same time, it's a complete mystery. Now, the next story we have here is takes that mystery just a little bit further. Have you ever taken a really nice picture with your digital camera and say, you know what, this doesn't look exactly as what my eye saw. This isn't anything near what I was able to capture. Is there any way of creating a camera? How many megapixels is my eye? Have you ever thought that? Well, let's just take a step back and take a look at it, shall we? Alright, so first up in the measuring of how many megapixels your eye is, take a look at exactly how the human retina functions. There's 5 million receptors on it that are called cones. They are responsible for all of your color vision. Now, this might be equal to 5 megapixels. Okay, alright, there's 5 megapixel cameras out there. They don't look anything like the image that we currently see. Alright, then you take the next level. Then you have the contrast ratio of your eyes. That is 100 million rods that actually detect monochrome contrast. That's shades between black and white, and then the cones detect all the hues. Now you take all that, hundreds of millions of them, and you take 100, that creates a 105 megapixel camera. Something that we don't currently have. All right, now everybody actually has two eyes, and the article goes to say, no fooling or no kidding. Of course everybody has, or most people have two eyes. And they continually flick around, and they take a much larger field of view than your current camera. Your camera might have a range of view anywhere around, I don't know, maybe 60 degrees out from the lens. And that might even be expecting too much. Your eyes have a range of vision that's around from peripheral to peripheral of around, that's around 120 degrees out of the circle. Now, every single one of those arc minutes that go around, it says there's a fine stitch that occurs when your brain in real time processes the images from your two ocular cameras and forms them into one thing that you're currently seeing. Like, for instance, I'm staring at my computer slightly disgusted over the fact that we have to retape this, and then at my microphone wondering if I'm too close and if I'm causing the same problem all over again. So, and then you take all that and you realize that 1 degree is roughly, I don't know, we're just going to cut through all the math and get to the hard and fast numbers. So, your eye translates to roughly 576 megapixels of available image data every time you open them. I mean, it's millions upon millions of gigs of data that are flowing through your receptors. It's a wonderful, crazy world we live in. And they said, but currently, curiously, the counterpoint is that most people cannot distinguish the difference between two photos when one is printed at 300 dpi and one is printed at 150. We're talking like normal 6x4 photos. I can actually see somewhat of a difference just because I'm so used to looking at different color and different quality prints. So if you print on two things that are the same basic quality on the very same paper using the very same ink, yes, it's very hard to tell, but a trained eye can actually see the difference. But most people cannot actually. So that about wraps up the tech tidbits section for you here today. Yet again, I believe that we're actually coming in much earlier than we did before. We have, like I said, Tech Talk's going to be continuing an article this weekend. We have the caffeinated bits for you here. Two little bits of information that we'd like to talk to you about. First up, tea and a coffee maker. Let me explain a little bit where we got to this. I decided this morning after I got into work, I said, you know what? I haven't had my cup of coffee yet, or I had a cup of coffee at home, but haven't had one in work. I didn't have anything ready to be made, so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to hold off. So somewhere around 11, 12 o'clock, I was like, you know what, I could really start to go for a cup of coffee or two. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to, I'll start to brew it. So popped open my little stash, and lo and behold, there's not a single bean to be found, not a single granule to be used. So headed on upstairs to the faculty office, the place where coffee goes to die, but there's always some there. So I looked for the mortal remains that are thrown there, and nothing. Absolutely no coffee upstairs. Maybe I looked in the wrong place. So I decided to say, all right, time for plan B. And I decided to explain what my plan B is to most people. I create tea in a coffee maker. Now, the easiest way to do this is you take one tea bag, you put it right where the coffee grounds and filter would have been, should this have been any normal day, and just so the water can filter through that one focal point as it goes in through the normal drip coffee maker into the pot. Then you take two tea bags and you hang them over the sides of the coffee pot under it. Now, you do this, you don't actually just lay the tea bags in the bottom, because the heat from the bottom of the element will actually slightly burn the tea leaves, which will create a much more bitter tea. Then with the addition of three tea bags total, so two in the pot, one up top, you actually have a nice, strong cup of tea, which has roughly about a third less caffeine in it than coffee, but still gets the job done. And it's actually good to switch things up every once in a while and see how everything goes. Now, the next little thing we have here is caffeine dependency and the ugly truth. The fact that anybody you know out there who's addicted to coffee or whatnot, they start to get that fabulous caffeine headache if they try and break that addiction. That drug's pulling you back in. So what they do is, people try and wean themselves off slowly. So I'm here to tell you my little secret for modulating the amount of coffee that I keep in my life. So every once in a while we eke up closer to the two pot range, or lately I've been trying to break it down to the one pot range, but every once in a while when I eke up around there, I'm like, you know what, I think it's time for a treatment. Now here's what the treatment is. Did you know that there's receptors in your brain that actually hold off the absorption of caffeine? So basically, the more coffee you drink, the more coffee you need to get the same effect. This happens with a lot of different drugs, but this one, at least I know, it was from an issue of 2600, the Hacker Quarterly, about 8 years ago at this point. Still have the issue upstairs, so I'm going to find out all the science behind it, but I don't care, it just works. So there's one chemical compound found in nature that breaks down this bond. So the more citric acid you drink, yes, out of orange juice and grapefruit juice, the more of that you drink, the more the receptors get eroded away. So if you were to take a glass of grapefruit juice, nice big glass in the morning, and one cup of coffee, it will hit you significantly harder than a coffee had been hitting you previously. So it's an easier way to reduce your caffeine intake by making that first cup new again. So it's the secondary virginity of coffee, so to speak. So hopefully you found that useful. We're going to talk a little bit about that on the next show again. We're going to break down a couple other myths about coffee and hopefully give you some new recipes and everything like that. Well, thanks for sticking through us on this the schizophrenic episode of the Caffeination 116. I should have named it the Caffeination 116A and the Caffeination 116B. So hopefully everybody out there enjoyed it. Please feel free to comment on this show or anything else. Please send us all kinds of... Yeah, 16 different kinds of music playing at once. That's exactly what you want to hear. Here we go. All right, now that's what you want to hear. A little Mortal Kombat at the end of the show, as per usual. This podcast lives, albeit reluctantly, over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. You can send your comments, feedback, suggestions, hate mail, whatever else you'd like to do over to caffeination@gmail.com. And it's we're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's BLUBRRY. That's Blueberry without the E's. It's a social podcasting network site, kind of like MySpace for podcasts. And speaking of MySpace, our MySpace page is at myspace.com/caffeination. So please, thank you everybody for listening. This is a crazy show, so thanks for all the new listeners. And please trust me, you can go back and listen to a couple other ones. We usually don't have this issue. So thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.